Shoot, yeah, here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. We're about to chat with Jared Sandler, the most anticipated Ranger segment of the day here in the nation, on The Fan in general. 11 days ago, we went into the weekend one game under 500. Got swept by the Angels. Then what'd they do? They dropped 3 of 4 to Houston.
Yeah.
And once again, after fighting and clawing their way back with a 5-game winning streak, the Rangers are within one game of 500 with Mackenzie Gore on the hill tonight. 6 o'clock pregame, 6:45 first pitch. Jared Sandler joins you now here on The Fan to talk about it, buddy. How the heck are you?
Hey, what's up, fellas? Doing great.
Doing a nice job on TV. You back in there tonight?
Thanks, man. Back in there tonight. Rangers fans will get rewarded with Dave back on Sunday. It's National Friday, Saturday, so they only have to put up with me for one more night this go around. But it's been fun. It's a lot more fun when they win, obviously. But I've had a good time. I appreciate you saying that, Gavin.
Another ninth inning win last night. I appreciate these guys getting it done. It gave me kind of 2023 vibes with the bottom of the eighth into the top of the ninth last night.
Yeah, and you know what else gave me 2023 vibes? And I'm not suggesting that, you know, that's they're on a collision course to the World Series just yet.
I heard.
You know, Dustin May was just dominant through four innings, and then the Rangers flipped the switch in the fifth, and they made an adjustment, and they made him work. And then next thing you know, he's not even completing the sixth inning, right? It looked like he was, like, headed for a seven inning, you know, maybe a couple hit, no run, season high and strikeout type start. And that just didn't end up being the case. And, you know, the Rangers would do that in 2023. They would, you know, face a guy who was pitching really well and then do something to get him off his game and do something to get him out earlier than what the initial trajectory would suggest. And, you know, I thought they did a really nice job adjusting to Dustin May, who was absolutely carving them up through the first four innings.
It's a Northwest Texan, man. That's all you can expect from
that's
a guy
right.
like
he
that.
Did it. He did it for you, and then he forgot about you in the fifth inning.
Yeah,
and
that's true. That guy.
That's when it changed.
I think they call that. I think they call that Jack Leitering the pitcher when he starts out really good for four innings and then gets hammered.
You got it, Gavin. I'll let you have that one.
Get him, Jared. Get him.
Yeah.
But
we got to talk about Jock Peterson, though, because this is really incredible what he's doing right now. It seems like he just can't miss. Second RBI game winner of the season. I mean, he has another three hits. I mean, his last 20 games, the numbers are outstanding. Like, this seems finally, much like yesterday, I asked about Duran, but Jock seems in a groove to where he's going to sustain this. Well, is there anything that you really noticed that's different, or is he just finally, he's gotten hot?
Yeah, so a couple things. One, using all fields, right? It seemed like last year you could just book Jock for a strikeout or a ground ball to the right side. And that's not Jock. You know, Jock, when he was at his best, obviously was hitting better in general, but he's someone who can hit, you know, from the opposite field gap, you know, to the right field line. You know, he's not going to necessarily hit a ton of home runs or anything to straightaway left or down the left field line, but He can hit balls to the left center field gap, and we saw that yesterday with his game winning hit. But I think that's one thing. And then the other thing is he's one of these guys who he controls the strike zone really well. He's got really good plate discipline, and so when he's putting himself in position to succeed by swinging at good pitches, that helps. You know, I think his first at bat on Monday against Mike McGreevy, he laid off like a really tough 3-2 pitch that you don't lay off unless you're really like locked in, right? And I asked Justin Buehler, the hitting coach, like, what can you tell me about what Jock's doing? He's like, man, he's just got this feeling like he steps up to the plate like he's a gangster and no one's going to get him, right? He's just got that confidence back that he didn't have last year. And it's been a huge, huge lift for this team. And I get it that he was not very good last year. And I get that it's tough for the first, second, third, fourth, fifth impression of all of last season to be washed away. But I think it's also okay to just embrace the fact that, yeah, he's been great this year. And maybe he's not going to totally live up to the contract when you combine last year and this year. Or maybe maybe he'll be just so good this year that it's like, who cares about last year? But like, it's okay to take a look and say, hey, this guy has arguably been our best offensive player this year, right along with Josh Jung and Ezekiel Duran. And it really, frankly, I think you can make an argument that he has been their best offensive player when you consider the on base and everything he's given you from the leadoff spot and the plate discipline and tone setting.
Jared, yesterday I was going to ask you the question about Jacob Latz, and do you feel like that he was going to be the closer? And then last night we saw the skip went a little bit different. I hear you guys talking on the radio too. It's like Skip always says, "Yeah, we'll see. We'll see who's closing tonight. We'll see." Yeah. Is that something? I thought we were going to get a little pattern, and now it's like we'll see again, right? Are we going to do this? How long do you think we're going to do this?
Well, Broadus, I'd say this. I think Jacob would have been the guy in the ninth if he was available. Skip said, you know, and this isn't like a Skip thing. A lot of managers don't want to use guys 3 days in a row this early in the season. I don't think Jacob was available. And so Jacob Latz, and that's right. Why they went with Jacob Junis. Now, you know, Skip did say the reason he's hesitant in saying he's our closer is because that suggests he is a ninth inning and beyond only guy, whereas he has said that there are situations where he would instead use him in the eighth, you know, depending on the leverage of the moment and, you know, who's due up and how it plays with who is available in the bullpen. And you know, I don't think that he wants to use Jacob Latz for two innings all the time. And so I think there are situations where when he brings him in the eighth inning, sometimes he does it with the hope that, hey, Jacob Latz is going to take us to the finish line. But he's smart enough to also know that there's a chance he doesn't. And so he's got to be protected if Jacob Latz, you know, can only get you 3, 4, or 5 outs. And so I do think you'll still see Jacob Latz at times pitch in the eighth inning. But I do think, Broadus, whether Skip Schumacher wants to identify him as the closer or not, Jacob Latz is this team's closer. They just might, like, instead of saying he's not the closer because he might pitch in the eighth, I'll just say he is the closer, but they might use him a little more creatively than your typical ninth inning only closer.
How about this Nicky Lopez fella, man? I mean, he stepped in and done a really, really nice job. Like, what is the role for him moving forward, especially as guys get healthy?
Yeah, so he has done a great job. He's been great defensively. I mean, he's been tested a whole lot the last two games with all the lefties the Cardinals have had and, you know, balls they've just pulled to the right side. And then offensively, you know, hey, multiple hit games for three straight from Sunday through Tuesday. Like, that's awesome for Nicky Lopez. You're not expecting that out of him. But then the ability to lay down the sack bunt, twice in the last three games and just kind of fill his role as the number nine guy in the lineup has been really helpful. You know, he's come up. We talked about this the last couple of years. When you've got Jake Berger coming up in a spot with runners on, you're not going to bunt with Jake Berger. First of all, I don't know that he's a capable bunter. I don't know what his bunting skills are, but Jake Berger's not in there to bunt. But sometimes you're almost like, dang, like I wish it was someone else because right now we just need a run and maybe bunting is the best option instead of the risk of a strikeout. And I know someone listening to be like, well, hey, then if that's the case, then Jake Berger needs to bunt. Totally understand that thought process. Again, it goes back to Victor Scott yesterday who popped out on a bunt attempt. Mm. Victor Scott's a good bunter. That was just, you know, a rare missed bunt opportunity for him. But a lot of these guys just aren't good bunters these days. So you can yell at the clouds all you want, but they're not good bunters. But when you have Nicky Lopez in the lineup, I'm not saying he's better than having a better, you know, more accomplished hitter, but there's really no question, right? It's, hey, we're going to lay down the bunt. We're going to put pressure on the other team. And then you need guys behind him to then deliver. And so when you've got Jock Peterson and you've got Josh Young and Brandon Nimmo who, you know, have had good seasons, then it really benefits you. It's almost like, you know, Skip Schumacher looks at this version of his team, this version without Seager and without Langford, without Josh Smith even, and is figured out, all right, what is this group's identity need to be offensively? And 1 through 5, 1 through 6, hey, you guys swing it. You guys swing it. Let's see what happens. But 7, 8, 9, he's been really creative, whether it's with bunting or running, hit and run situations, first and third, try getting a rundown type spot. So I just think it's almost forced them to rethink the way they want to go about things offensively. And Nicky Lopez has fulfilled his job tremendously. Now, what's going to happen when guys start to come back? You know, I don't want people to just forget that, hey, small sample sizes don't always extrapolate through the rest of the season. it's you're not taking Nicky Lopez out of the order anytime immediately by any means, but maybe Ezekiel Duran is going to go from short to second when Corey Seager comes back. Or maybe you can keep Nicky Lopez in there, and maybe maybe Zeke ends up in the outfield. But then when Wyatt Langford comes back, is Evan Carter going to stick around because of how good he's been in center? Are they going to think of other ways to try and get his bat going? Like, you have options, but I think a guy like Nicky Lopez is a very valuable player off the bench on a good team. Whether or not he ends up on the bench, probably, it depends on the health of others. And then when he maybe starts to cool down a little bit.
So speaking of those decisions, when you do have one Evan Carter ready to come, or excuse me, between Evan Carter and Alejandro Osuna, once you get Langford back in the lineup, is that something that Osuna is making this a tough decision?
Sorry, Zach, I broke up. Are you saying is Osuna making it a tough decision?
Yeah, when you have Langford back, now you've got a little playing time for Osuna versus Evan Carter. Do you send back Osuna down? I mean, he's been playing really, really well right now and come up with some big-time clutch hits.
Yeah, it probably would be tough to keep them both up right now. And I guess one of the questions has to be, are you comfortable with Wyatt Langford getting a lion's share of the time in center field, coming off an injury? Now, it's not a lower body injury. It's not a back injury or anything, but that is, it's a little more of a workload. If you are comfortable with that, then maybe that makes your decision a little bit easier. If you're comfortable with Alejandro and Osuna in center, which I don't think, and there's no disrespect to Alejandro Osuna, but I don't think they look at him and say, hey, he's our everyday center fielder, or Michael Hellman is our everyday center fielder right now. But I think that's the question they got to ask is, because center field is such a valuable spot defensively. And the Rangers have been scoring a lot more here recently, but they still, I don't know that it's enough for us to change the thought of who and what this team is. And so you need to have an anchor there in center, especially because your infield defense hasn't been as good as you would have liked so far this year. And Zach, I'd also say this, it's not like Alejandro Osuna is just white hot right now. He has cooled off a little bit. I think he's, like 3 or 4 for his last 27, something of that nature. He's not really slugging a lot. So there's definitely room for Alejandro Osuna to improve if he were to get more triple A bats. It's not like he's accomplished everything he can accomplish at that level, but he's definitely a great asset to this team, the way he works at bats. And I also think the energy that he brings is something that, you can't really quantify, but there's definitely a value to that. I just think that Evan Carter's defense has been so, so, so good in center field. I think that might continue to buy him some time to get the bat going in the right direction.
How strong of a case does our guy Zeke have for All-Star?
I think he's got a great case, actually, Gavin. I was a little surprised when I looked at it today, not because I was unaware of how good he's been, but just thinking, well, there's probably going to be some second basemen that make it a no contest. Like with Jock Peterson, for instance, you look at the DH spot, I mean, Yordan Alvarez is running away with that. As good as Jock's been, it's going to be tough for him to win that vote unless Rangers fans stuff the ballot, which, hey, there's nothing against that, nothing wrong with that. But Zeke, at second base, and that's where he's on the ballot as a second baseman, right? I know he's been playing a lot of short. The Rangers got him on the ballot as a second baseman, which is awesome. He leads all second basemen in on base and slugging and OPS. He's leads in RBIs. He's second in extra base hits, second in doubles, second in batting average. I mean, he's like, other than the lack of name recognition, because this is a vote, right? It's not, this stage is not necessarily merit. Because fans can stuff the ballot. But if you were to look at the stats, I think you could make a really, really strong case that Ezekiel Duran should be the starting second baseman right now for the American League. And I hope Rangers fans get going. I think that the ballot's open today. I know I tweeted a link and we'll continue to do so to get some representation there.
Love it, dude. Have a great night. And we'll catch up with you on Friday.
See you guys.
There he goes. He's at Jared Sandler on Twitter, by the way, at Jared Sandler, if you want to jump into his timeline there and get involved in voting up your guy, Ezekiel Duran, who has been an absolute lifesaver here over the last month plus. And yeah, it'd be awesome to see him finally get that recognition of being an All-Star after the journey that he's been on. I've been convinced for about the last year that there was no reason to even have him on the big league team, but they kept him there, and it has paid off in a massive way. So salute to him and salute to Sands for joining us. We got the C note coming up on the other side and why the Cowboys had no shot to trade for the hometown heroes coming up next on 105.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
5-3 The Fan. Yeah, buddy. Welcome back. G-Bag Nation, 105.3 The Fan. Time to hit the C-note. Cowboys news of the evening. And there's some good stuff today. We'll get to that here very shortly. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. There was a text earlier asking for any Alex Highsmith updates.
Yeah, he's going to be, the Cowboys are going to trade for him.
Yeah, apparently he got to their facility today for mandatory minicamp and left within 30 minutes. So all the reporters were buzzing, but then the team said he's just sick. So there's nothing there. All of the talk is that they're willing to keep those three together for one more year because Herbig's contract isn't going to spike and Highsmith's is still pretty manageable. But maybe in March next year, or maybe at the trade deadline, if they are struggling, their tune could change on either Highsmith or TJ Watt. But I don't know if you want TJ Watt anymore. Just signed an extension last offseason, and he's showing signs that maybe he's slowing down more so than Myles Garrett.
At this point, I don't think I would want to give up the capital it would take.
It would, it would take a first hell of a first 7 weeks.
No, I don't think that would be worth it.
Okay, let's start here with The Athletic. We go to John Machota here, and he has ranked for you the Cowboys position groups. Top position group of the Cowboys is
wide receiver.
Wide receiver?
It's got to be, right? You got two top 10 wide receivers.
I mean, what about your quarterback, dude?
Well, do they have a second quarterback that's a top 10 player?
Why are you going to – you don't – if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks, bro.
Well, if you have two top 10 quarterbacks, I've got two top 10 quarterbacks, baby.
Are you trolling, Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so.
Heck yeah, I am, dude. I thought so. Having a damn good time doing it.
I do think quarterback's probably in the top three.
On both sides.
Well, it's like, would you rather have two top 10 wide receivers or one top maybe 7 or 8 quarterback?
If Dak were a top 3 quarterback, I'd take him over the wide receivers. I just don't think he is.
Okay. But there's still time?
There's still time.
I mean, there's a case to be made that Dak's like top 5 quarterback.
I think he's in that 5 to 8 range.
Five to eight range.
When he's like playing at his peak.
So if you got him on the top side of that, behind Allen, Mahomes, Burrow, and maybe May. So if you got him at 5.
Hey, wow. Okay. He did play well
last year. Runner-up.
You just look at it like this, dude. Sure.
Stafford would be the guy you go with.
Would you rather go into a game with Lamb and Pickens and Milton at quarterback, or you're thrown to Flannoy and whoever the hell else, but Dak's playing quarterback?
No, I mean, I'd still rather have that.
I mean, as much as I'm trolling, I think ultimately
You could put your quarterback at 1 if you wanted to. I just think if we're just talking about like what's the best position group, I think their wide receiver group's better than anybody in football. I don't know that their quarterback's better than anybody in football.
Well, not disagree with you on that. Machota did put the QB at number 2. And they did get an upgrade at backup, Sam Howell, a guy that's probably started 15, 20 games or so in his career. But still, I think they did the right thing at wide receiver. Number 3, though, boys.
Okay, this is where it gets a little tough.
It is tough.
Safety?
I mean, Quinnen Williams not like a sort of a trump card for just the defense in general?
You want to go defensive tackle?
He did
defensive line.
Okay, defensive line. If they just had a pass rusher that you knew was going to go out there and get you 10 sacks, it's tough. I'll still go with Quinnen Williams being like the most.
I'm fine with defensive line there because I like Gary a little bit more than you do.
And I like Gary as a run defender.
I think he's a better pass rusher than you're giving him credit for.
I think you're going to end up liking Gary as a pass rusher.
Yeah, and that'll go a long way for this defense if Gary can be some level of
like,
okay.
I think he averages 8.5.
Like, do teams have to even care about him on passing downs?
Yeah.
Well, do they send any extra help to him on passing downs? I think that would go a long way.
Yeah. He did detach. He put the outside linebackers as their own group.
Okay, so there you go.
It's your internal guys.
I would go D-line.
Quinnen Williams, Kenny Clark, Bullard, Overton, Abonya. And he's got them fourth. There is a position group before we get to defensive line.
Okay.
Where's he got the damn safeties?
Yeah, there you go. Well, Chuck, there's your safeties.
Yeah, there it is. With Caleb Downs and Jalen Thompson.
Is that safety group
sexy? Marquise Bell. Okay.
I keep putting up a fight on these things, and Walchuk just keeps being right every time.
And it's weird. It's, hey, I got my fastball here. We're talking Cowboys.
I think this is a line of demarcation, though, where you go now to a group where there's going to be more holes, but maybe you feel like there's enough strength in here to be in the conversation. Number five is?
O-line.
Offensive line.
This Michael Trigg guy has Walchuk.
I know. He's probably not even going to make the team, and I'm going to look like an idiot.
I mean, with Smith and Booker, you're feeling great, right?
Yeah,
You feel great
about your interior three.
Cooper Beebe, some of the metrics on Cooper Beebe last year suggest that maybe the breakout season is loading.
Oh, it's loading.
But then, Tyler Guyton, Terrence Steele, Nate Thomas.
It's freaking loading. Don't laugh at me, Brian.
Better not be bloating.
Okay.
Screw you, Eric. Goodbye.
I mean, he's listening. You just
he
get married.
He does get kind of fleshy in the cheeks, doesn't he?
You get married, you go on the honeymoon.
I can relate.
That wedding cake, all of a sudden you double down on it. Like, honey, where did we get that cake? What was that cake again?
It's pretty damn delicious.
You're chewing on it.
Did
all
you freeze
off-season.
It? Don't even freeze it. Let's just finish it now.
Let's just get another one.
Number six.
Cooper Dan Beebe.
Number six is your tight ends, and I thought that was interesting to be ahead of running back and ahead of outside linebacker. So six tight ends, and yes.
Why would you say ahead of running back?
I think Javonte Williams is better than any tight end they have.
Well, I thought you guys were going to be salty about Rashawn Gary getting pushed down the list some more, man. I mean, the outside linebackers haven't even made an appearance on this list. We got Jake Ferguson, 6 yards a pop, and Brevin Span Ford.
Well, okay, Ferg had eight touchdowns last year.
No, come I know. On. We do forget about that.
You know, like, let's
Ferg's
be real
touchdowns
here.
Are legit.
I get it. I was disappointed with his yak, too, but Ferg was still a good player. He's got to clean up the fumbles. And I think Brevin Span Ford can take another step. Maybe I'm overly high on Spanford and Trigg, and I will accept that responsibility if we get into the season and they stink. I'll raise my hands and say, Zach, you were wrong and you were an idiot. But I'm excited about him on June the 3rd.
I'm pulling that, by the way. I'm going to keep that Zach, you were wrong. Zach, you were an idiot thing.
Should
ice cold.
We probably played a lot.
Okay, so number seven is running back. Number eight is outside linebacker. They just need to go trade for Crosby. You know, that would that'd be amazing.
Go be aggressive. Make it happen. Get sexy.
Yeah. Only groups worse than their outside linebackers, special teams, and kick coverage was a big deal last year. Sure. They got to get that fixed. Although I feel like Aubrey should at least elevate you. One of the best kickers in the game.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Well, I think the punter's going south on you.
Oh, crap. Really.
And they don't have any plans for another one?
Well, do you guys feel like watching the games and we're at the stadium, you know, for the 8 or 9 games, we get to see him live. It just kind of seems like that he's lost that pop, like his ability to drive the ball and getting kind of height out of it. I just kind of felt like it was maybe he was some of the reasons why they were having some problems.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is his 15th year.
Yeah,
maybe he's older.
I think the extension and stuff like that, I don't think has been very good.
Father time versus hang time.
Well, we better go get another Australian punter or something. I like the Aussie punters.
So the only two groups worse than your special teams are the corners that we need some positive developments on. We talked about that yesterday. More Revel, a couple opportunities for younger guys, and then inside linebacker with D Winters and Overshown, Barham and Shamar.
I think
James.
That's where they're going to go. I think that's where they're going to go out of play.
That's what you were saying yesterday.
Yeah, and listen, guys, it's just gut feeling. I haven't talked to anybody over there about it. I think Will and those guys are going to look at their team and they're going to take the opportunity. One of these linebackers, inside linebackers, is going to want to like get signed up for camp, not wait around. So I could see them. Oh, yeah. I could see them going to get.
It's probably
guy.
Their weakest group on paper.
All right, Joseph Hoyt, Morning News, wrote about why the Cowboys couldn't get more involved for Myles Garrett, the linchpin of the discussion being they just don't have a great young player like Jared Verse to make it happen. The only thing you could argue would be Tyler Booker. That would be the only comparison as far as good young player now with a even better trajectory and cost certainty. Would you guys have been willing to put Tyler Booker plus 1, 2, and 3 on the table 2 days ago? 2 days and 2 hours ago to get Myles Garrett.
The deal you just asked are the 2 ones for Max Crosby. Think about that one.
Well, I wouldn't do that now.
Well, no. At a time, you were thinking about it.
Yeah, but now you know about the knee, right? So, I mean, I was all in on 2 ones for Max, but now it shouldn't be that much. When you just had a team back out of it.
I hate the idea that I'm like going to be so married to Tyler Booker that I don't want Myles Garrett, though. Like, that kind of throws me off because that's hesitant to just say yes.
He might be better than the left guard.
Booker might be better than Smith.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's all said and done.
You would have T.J. Bass step in for Booker then?
Yeah. Well,
if you had to. Yeah, that would be. Because what would happen is and we might very well see this happen. If we don't see anything positive at left tackle this summer. Tyler
Smith.
Yeah, Tyler Smith going to left tackle and then putting T.J. Bass at left guard.
Well,
it's kind of scary because Bass was better at right than he was at left.
Well,
I feel like struggle.
I mean, it's just hard to project how good Tyler Smith would be out there. You broke the tape last year in those three games that he finished the season on. How would you give that the thumbs up or the thumbs down?
I think it all really depends on getting it done early. I'm not waiting until week 10 and try and do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to give him a chance. But they need to give. If things do not work out at left tackle, I'm not going to sit there and be held hostage by that position.
Yeah,
I'm not going to put somebody out there too that's not any good or not ready to play. So that's how I look at that right now.
Okay, we got Randy Gersey. Did I say that name right? SI. Have you guys ever met Randy Gersey?
No.
I see his stories all the time.
I don't think I've met Randy.
I wonder if he's local. But salute to you, Randy. Thanks for the content. Wrote about Drake London's contract making George Pickens' future deal higher, and probably a number of people wrote about this on social or online. But, you know, Drake London's up there between 35 and 37, depending on if he hits incentives. Obviously, I'm disappointed that the Cowboys told us all offseason they had a plan to keep George Pickens around, but it turned out they were just like, yeah, we could tag him three times in a row. I guess that's what they were kind of alluding to when they were telling us they totally had the ability to go with Pickens long term. But his best season is better than London's best season by 200 yards and two touchdowns. So to me, it comes down to actually the quarterback again, because if you feel like we can't do another contract with Dak Prescott after this one, maybe you're setting it up to our cap hit is going to be so brutal. Like when we do move on from Dak, we're going to have to take a 9-figure cap hit, and we just don't want to load up on any more contracts. So you're going to make that process more difficult. So they're trying to go year to year until they have certainty on how that. But it's starting to look like, remember when Drew Brees had something still in the tank, but he retired? The Saints were $95 million over the cap before March 1. And Sean Payton was like, see ya. I destroyed your cap. See ya later. And Drew Brees was like, you're not going to be able to make a winning team around me because you've done everything in your power the last 5 years pushing money forward. And going into this past offseason, Dak's cap number was supposed to be, what, 90? So they're gonna push that back two more times and create this massive balloon payment. And I just don't know if they think it's sustainable to do a long-term deal with George Pickens and then also have that on their ledger as this Dak Prescott contract begins to wind down. And it's unfortunate, I think, in some ways, but it could also be very exciting because if they plan it out to have the year after Dak retires be a 3-win season, maybe they could be in position to take a quarterback number one overall for the first time, since Troy Aikman. So, snapshot of what's happening around the Cowboys news at this hour, this afternoon. We got Krusty's Corner coming up next. Buddy, where are you taking it?
Yeah, you know what? I solicited some questions from the fans, believe it or not. We're going to get some fan questions on you today. We'll do that.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Next.
Thank you very much, Lucius. It's the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan, and it is time now for the C-Note, brought to you by Greystone Roofing. Go to greystone-roofing.com, and here he is, the king.
Hey, kids! Your old pal Krusty is going to teach you 5 new words.
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian Waters.
Thank you very much, Lucius. Always appreciate you playing that, and thank you to Greystone for being a part of this as well. Man, I had something pulled up on Twitter X, and now I can't find it.
Oh,
what
no.
What account are we looking for here?
Oh, well, okay, let me
let's see. This is a contest. Okay. Who can find it?
No. It was actually about Barry. Yeah, exactly, Lucius. Thank you. Exactly what I was thinking. It was Andrew Berry, right? The
Browns GM.
Browns GM.
Yes.
He admitted today, a reporter asked him why they didn't try and shop the deal,
right,
and get more picks for said player.
Yeah, Miles wasn't on the block. Why not open up the bidding and get a few more picks?
That was a reporter's question. His answer was, Chief,
that wasn't the goal.
If your general manager's saying that, guys, how are we feeling?
I think, okay, when I first saw it, I was like, that feels so stupid to me, too. But then you hear him explain it a little bit, and I think it wasn't about another first-round pick. It was
all about the player.
It was being able to get a young stud player like a Jared Verse.
Thank you.
Who they valued more so than just another first round pick.
Yes, I think this has been taken like it's Nico Harrison and I'm not opening up bidding for Luka Doncic.
Right.
When in fact, I couldn't disagree more. He wanted and coveted an edge rusher that he valued, and there was really only one, and it was Jared Verse. And I think that's what it came down to.
And like Nico wanted the player, but he wanted the older, injured player.
Yes.
This is like instead of getting Jared Verse, who's the young, up and coming, cheap labor stud, you go get the, let's say, Max Crosby.
Yeah.
And it's like, why would you do that? That's a little bit more of the equivalent of Nico, who valued somebody that was older and more fragile than the guy that you were trading away. Whereas he's going, okay, I want the younger player who's on the ascent and is super cheap, mm-hmm, instead of the lottery ticket that is the first round pick, especially from a team like the Rams, who that first round pick's probably not going to be all that valuable,
right,
when it's 30, 31, 32.
Yeah, when I read that tweet, though, I thought maybe he did it to take care of Myles Garrett, to give the,
sure,
player what he wanted, and I never want my team to do that. Obviously, Nico did what he did because he was scared because he's an idiot. But I don't think the Browns could have possibly got more than what they got. I think they knew they were dealing with the team that says bleep them picks,
right,
and is desperately going for it right now. And you understand the market value of Jared Verse is a 1+, maybe,
right,
2 1s already.
Yeah.
So you really cleaned up here.
So it was the go in and get in the player. And when I first saw it, I thought, man, people are going to take this the wrong way.
And they are.
And they're taking it really the wrong way. But they coveted the player more than they did, and the control of the player,
yes,
more than the guy they traded away.
Which in the Browns' history, they've missed on a lot of picks. And I get that. And Jared Verse is an ascending player that's a defensive rookie of the year that's also top 10 in most pressure and pass rush win rate categories. Like, I think the Browns did an excellent job with the return they got on this trade. If they were going to trade Myles Garrett, I think this trade was, I can't, unless it's Jalen Carter from the Eagles, which thank God didn't happen.
Yeah.
I don't know really what other player they could have gotten that was better than Verse.
Yeah, they were floating the idea that they went after Carter. Carter was offered.
Yeah.
So, you know, that just shows you. Maybe that tells you what the Eagles think about him, you know, with a little bit, if they were going to put him out on. But they know they had to throw a big bait to get a big fish. Okay, I asked the Tolos for some questions and stuff. I know I like to ask you guys questions. I think I picked out about five of really some good ones here, and I'm interested to kind of get you guys' opinion on them because they're all really Cowboy related, and we'll see how this all plays out. But Dyson wanted to know this, Dawson: what happens if this defense is absolutely terrible this season again? Do you ride with CP again, or do you try somebody else?
Oh, I think if it's bad again, the conversation becomes, do we want to roll with these tackles another year, offensive tackles?
Sure.
You know, or are we going to double down on back-to-back defensive priority? I don't think it would be to move on from Christian Parker. I think it would be, we settled Christian Parker with some of the worst corners in the league.
Mm.
And no inside linebackers.
Mm.
I would say, you know, we still haven't given enough. You know, like, where did you really upgrade?
Okay.
Where'd you really upgrade this defense?
Okay.
Safety.
Yeah. Right.
That's it. It's the least important position on defense.
Yeah. How about you, Chief?
Moving on from Christian Parker after year one would only be because he was just, like, so
he was clearly
incompetent.
Mike Nolan-like.
Yeah, he's getting Tabasco sauce in his eyeball,
yeah,
and everybody
defensive.
In the locker room, hates him.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it would have to be,
it would have to be really, really toxic, and it all leading back to Christian Parker in order to move on from him. Like, this is his first year as a defensive coordinator, and yeah, you still don't have the personnel that would make you feel like, oh my gosh, this should be a top 10 defense or something. We're just hoping it's going to be average. So moving on from Parker, I think, would be pretty dang aggressive.
I think it means your team's probably terrible. I think they'd be looking at moving on from the head coach before they looked at moving on from CP.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe it's the head coach, and then the new head coach comes in and wants his own guy or something, like collateral damage. But moving on from CP, I think, is one of the more least likely things that would happen.
And I think both are probably not likely, just because we know Jerry doesn't really want to pay a coach.
Sure.
You know, and he doesn't really, he lets them kind of, you know, let's play it out, right? And I think it'll come down to what you said, Gavin, where, you know, it's more than one off season to build this defense the way that CP wants it with the players and roster construction. So I'd give him the benefit of the doubt.
I do think Shoddy is Jerry's last coach, not only because I think he's going to lead this team back to the NFC Championship game, but because he includes Jerry in a way that's got to be intoxicating.
No, see, you're dead balls right about that, Dawson, because I remember one of the reasons why Jerry had such a problem with Parcells. Is Parcells would always go to Steven to get stuff done. Jerry just wants to be included. Jerry wants to be part of the process and all that. So
Jimmy resented him.
Yeah.
Garrett tolerated him.
Exactly.
Was really good at ignoring him and focusing on the process. McCarthy was annoyed and sniped a little bit, was bristly with it.
Like, why aren't you extending me? How do I win in 12 games?
You don't appreciate me.
You don't appreciate me.
I think Shoddy's like, hey, buddy, you want to come in here and see what we're working on?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's show and tell.
You're absolutely right about that. All right. Junior asked this question, and Dawson, I have a feeling that you're going to disagree with this one, but Junior said, and I wrote this down, who do you think deserves the credit for the proper off season? And when you talk about the way that they went about their business, and is it a Shoddy or is it Jerry and Steven? If you were to give credit, and maybe you don't think it was a proper off season because maybe you don't feel like they helped them enough. So that's why I'm a little interested, cause just because your answer.
Yeah.
But the way that they did it was clearly different than before. Who would you give the credit to, the head coach or to Jerry and Steven for the way they did this?
I mean, I don't want to give Jerry and Steven too much credit because they were still bottom five in spending.
Okay.
But I'm gonna say Shoddy for finding Parker and then plugging in a couple of players that are in line with the trend of maybe emphasizing secondary more, getting nickel figured out, maybe getting the Zach Bond linebacker in Barham.
Sure.
Like these are modern, real present time strategic adjustments that I think Shoddy and Parker are coming together on.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it's mostly Shoddy here. And maybe identifying the players to some extent. Of course, you would go, you know, Will McClay, once he gets the green light to, hey, you can actually do something in free agency, not as much as we would have all probably wanted, but, you know, credit to him for that. But I think a lot of this over the last year of becoming a little bit more with the trends, with the times, forward thinking, I think most of that is spearheaded by Shoddy.
How about you there, Zachary?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Shoddy deserves a lot of credit for it. I will say, in terms of like allowing the coach to go out and get the players, though, that is Jerry and Steven, and that's kind of what they've done. Like, when you hire a new defensive coordinator, Bobby had the numbers of it. Like, they have allowed that DC to go out and acquire the players that he wants. So I do think that in terms of that aspect of it, like, Jerry and Steven bought in and said, okay, like, who do you need? Well, what can we try and do? Now, were they as aggressive as we wanted? Look, they did try with the linebackers, and they had a number in which we're not going over, and maybe you wish, okay, they did go over it, but I can't say they were wrong for a player like N'Kobe Dean to not try and say, like, I don't think N'Kobe Dean's worth that, to bust the budget to go and say, we're going to overpay by $2 or $3 million to just make sure you don't go to Vegas. So they try, they just didn't get all the pieces.
Zach, I'll stay with you, and this is the final one here. Pro Bowlish Bland or Pro Bowlish Overshown?
crap.
What would you prefer?
Yeah. One or the other. Pro Bowlish bland or Pro Bowlish overshown? That's from Rich.
It's a great question, my Rich. I think I would go Pro Bowlish overshown. Because that has been such a glaring weakness on defense. I think you could argue corner as well, but I feel a little bit better about some of the other options at corner stepping up. If you don't have overshown, I'm not a huge Shamar James believer. Justin Barron's a total unknown. We'll see about Barham. I just think that's the type of player that if he has a Pro Bowl season, defensive coordinators have to schematically game plan for him every week. Or offensive coordinators do.
Austin, you got a thought on that one?
I want it to be Jerron Bland because they need a corner that can take on wide receiver ones right now, and I don't think they have one. Clearly, they don't have one.
Yeah,
we're waiting for him to emerge.
Yeah, I'd go with Bland.
Just, all right.
Yeah, you can't hide. You can't hide a corner who's not any good. But if you got one who's solid, that goes a long way with allowing Christian Parker to do some of the things that he would like to do in the secondary.
The other guy's going to need a lot of help, you know. But Fangio has had success with Quinyon Mitchell, DeJean, and then the other guy, forgetting their two names right now.
Adoree Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, that guy is getting benched. They're getting toasted. But if you have one that's good, you can kind of leave him and then help out the other dude. So, and obviously they really need both of them, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
We got two down, two to go. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Krusty's Corner every afternoon at this time, brought to you by Greystone Roofing. We got Tim Cato, All City, joining you next here in the Nation.